And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, my little party monsters! Welcome to the Chris Keeper's Rotten New Year's Eve Party! As we get ready to count down the new year, we bid adieu to Old Man 2025 as he slinks out of town, his back bent, his beard dragging in the mud, and his diaper filled with last year's dookie. Oh, people are excited. Now it's time to unleash Baby 2026 from his steel-reinforced bassinet. And there he is, his head the size of a beach ball, claws the size of a catcher's mitt, and the toothy smile of a mutated timber wolf. Whoa, as he wades his way through the wall of human flesh, slashing his way to the milk truck at the other end of the crowd, I would like to thank Demanza Milk Incorporated for the 200 gallons of fresh whole milk which will fuel Baby 2026, as he makes this the year we all knew it was gonna be. Please stay tuned for the late movie afterwards, Larry Cohen's It's Alive.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am one of your co-hosts, Mr. Luke Giaconetti, and I'd like to thank everyone for downloading and listening to the show today. But who is here to help celebrate this little bundle of joy? Because I couldn't do this by myself. Left to right across your podcast dial, first we have my brother, Mr. Jason Giaconetti.
Hunting and killing babies doesn't seem to be my specialty.
You just lead them a little less. That's the old joke, right? You know, how can you shoot? Yeah, well. How can you shoot kids? And of course, as always, Two True Freaks OG Chris Honeywell.
Well, since our co-host, the Hair Metal Hero, isn't here tonight, I've selected a quote to read in a Boston accent in tribute to the missing Hair Metal Hero for this week. All right, we're not talking about a retarded kid. We're talking about a monstrosity.
Oh, God.
Butchered that Boston accent, but I'm trying.
Yep. And the one I'll add is the one I think is probably the most telling quote we've had for a long time. For this entire podcast network, one must not allow oneself to be impressed by escapist fiction. So... if you can't tell what we're talking about, folks, I don't know what we can do for you, but set your Wayback Machine to either 1973 or 1974, or perhaps even slightly earlier than that, but we're going to call it 1974 with It's Alive. And this one is a horror rack hanger-on that I have very, very distinct memories of seeing on many different horror racks in different video rental shops over the years. Most commonly, the Warner Home Video It's Alive. Warner had kind of the standard trade dress with, it looks like Bend-Aid dots. I'll throw it into the chat so the guys can see it. Where it looks kind of like Bend-Aid dots on the cover, and they kind of, change in the gradient. And just a simple white text, It's Alive, with the image from the poster art of the bassinet with the clawed baby hand hanging out of it. So this was one I think everybody a certain age knows this movie, even if they've never seen it.
Right.
Oh, I have a story. So this movie came out 1974. I was 6 years old. I remember seeing the commercial for this on TV, the classic TV spot with the bassinet, with the baby music playing and the camera tracking, you know, the blah, 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 the baby is blah, 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 blah. The only problem with it is it's alive. And as it,
yep.
you see the claw hanging out and you hear like, wah, wah, scared the shit out of me. I remember being at a party with my parents. They were hanging out with some, you know, family friends, and they had a party out at their house, and they had the stereo play and they had the radio play, and that came on over the radio and it freaked me out. But, you know, it was PG, 6 years old. My parents weren't taking me to that movie. I wasn't going to that movie because I was always scared shitless from the trailer. But when HBO happened, that movie was on HBO all the time, and I had a friend named George Clark. And George Clark was so talented. He was also the first person with HBO in our town. He was so talented at describing movies, and I remember him describing the baby giving birth, the attack on the milkman, and the very end of this movie in detail. I didn't see this movie till about 3 or 4 years ago when we did it on the Honeywell experiment. And then I was like, all right, now I get to see what my imagination, based on George Clark's description of this, holds up to the movie. And I'm like, there's no way the movie can hold up to the, you know. God damn it, if he didn't describe it so well that those three sequences in the movie were exactly how I had, like, they played out exactly like I had them in my head, just from his wonder. And I was watching it going, oh, this is exactly how I've been carrying around this movie in my head without seeing it for years. And yeah, I love this. I love this movie. I'm a Larry Cohen fan, so, you know, I mean, Jason and I were talking about it before you came on. I just love how he, you know, no budget, but he always manages to get, like, he managed to get Bernard Herrmann to do the music for this, and all the cast, even the cheesiest cops and side players in this are all 100% on board and good, you know. And the husband and wife are do a great job. Little over the top, but awesomely so. Like, and I find that all his movies are like that. They always have a better script than you would think they would. Especially It's Alive. It's Alive sounds like a stupid movie. Everything about it. And for years I'd heard, oh, the rubber baby, the stupid rubber baby. They did a great job. They did have a rubber baby. They had a great job of using that rubber baby to the best effect. I'm sure there's some scenes with that rubber baby that had people shit in their pants in the movie theaters.
Yeah.
Like that initial out of focus shot of it just sort of coming up to somebody's face, and it's just held just long enough before it looks too rubbery. You know, there's a couple points where it's maybe held a little too long, but I love this movie. This time I was just soaking myself in the 70s set, you know, set design, and like the kitchen with a carpeted kitchen. Who the hell has carpeted kitchen? Nobody after the 70s, because they found out that was a shitty idea. And like, he's got the gallon of wine in a basket. Even when they're like, he goes into the bathroom and he's doing, you know, brushing his teeth or something. And he's got like a dirty ass bathroom mirror, like a real house, like somebody's real house. And I'm just I love Larry Cohen. You know, they didn't even bother to wipe.
Yeah, they didn't even clean the mirror up. I mean, that's the thing, is that for a movie where, again, with this premise about, you know, the wife for some reason giving birth to a mutant big carnivorous monstrous baby, right? It has a certain sincerity to it, right? It has a certain vermissitude.
Oh yeah,
to it. You know, we you talk about the house. My note was the house gets more 70s as we see more rooms. Every room is more 70s than
every
the last
room.
One.
Yes,
and
shoved full of stuff, like a real house. So it's like a real messy house. His son's room is immaculately set designed. It was probably just he's Larry Cohen. He would just find some place and film there, you know, whether
right.
permit or not. You know, he's probably just like one of the he goes, "You have a kid, right?
Yeah.
It's you and your wife and a kid. You have a kid in the kids' room. Can we film in your house? You got that nice kitchen with the new carpeting in it. The nice orange patterned carpeting on your kitchen floor."
Yep.
I mean, the first time a pasta sauce or like, God forbid, like clam sauce or something goes.
Or milk.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Milk. Yeah.
It's just like that carpet better have come with a steam cleaner built into the price of it because, and you better just have that thing sitting out all the time because, yeah. Oh my God.
So
and a cat,
yeah,
on top of it.
All right, so as you were talking about the baby and stuff, and then Rick Baker created the effects for this, mm-hmm. and he had done a full head monster baby mask and a pair of gloves and a partial bodysuit, which was worn by Baker's then girlfriend and now his wife, Elaine Alexander. And like Larry Cohen, this is a great story. Larry Cohen called Rick Baker on the telephone while Rick Baker was at Dick Smith's house while Dick Smith was working on the special effects for The Exorcist. So during the phone call, Cohen pitched the film's concept to Baker and suggested building a monster baby suit that could be worn by, I'm not kidding, either Cohen's actual cat or a chicken or something. Maybe two chickens. That's how he pitched this.
Two chickens in a pantomime baby outfit. Yeah. Oh my God. I love Larry Cohen.
Yeah. Because only Larry Cohen can think of that. So, okay, so hang on a sec. So, right. So, the thing is, so for the design of the monster, Cohen drew a picture of what he wanted to look like to Rick Baker with an oversized forehead and a pulsating vein running right through the middle of the head. Cohen and Baker based it off of the hybrid of the Star Child from 2001 A Space Odyssey and a wolf. That's
yeah,
what
okay.
They, right. So, but they said so they filmed It's Alive, right? And It's Alive was filmed during the week. On the weekends, they filmed Hell Up in Harlem, which was also filmed and edited at the exact same time, which is why that means a lot of the same cast and crew worked on both of them. They worked 7 straight days. They worked 5 days during the week on It's Alive, and then the 2 days in the weekend on Hell Up in Harlem. Hell Up in Harlem actually came out before this did. So, yeah. Larry Cohen, folks. Larry Cohen. That's... Oh, my God. It's just crazy. Just absolutely crazy. Oh, so... Yeah. But, yeah. So, there you go. I just felt those stories needed to come out because there's nothing probably describes... the whole process of getting into a Larry Cohen movie than this.
Kid in this? Is that the same? Is that Michael from Jaws?
Oh, I don't know. Hang on.
I think it's the same kid because he's so distinct. He's got that big headed 70s kid look. He looks like a little Gary Shandling.
Gary Shandling. There's a pull.
He doesn't have a link. His name is Chris, and Daniel Holzman
says he only has one credit, and that's this movie.
Yep.
He should have had more because he's a very good naturalistic kid actor, and I was like, this is the kind of kid actor that Spielberg would love to get his hands on. He looks like the son from Jaws, but a lot of people look like that in that time period.
A lot of people.
And Jaws was close enough in time period production that it could have been that kid like 1 year. But he just had that great naturalistic 70s. I mean, just the 70s. I wish police sirens still look like the police sirens on the cars in this movie. They're so awesome. They just sort of stuck up there.
Oh, okay. So I found something about Daniel Holzman. Here we go. Daniel Hosman was performing at the Children's Playhouse when one of the actors from the film came by to watch. He asked him to meet with their writer and director, Larry Cohen, and did a couple of days. The meeting seemed pretty informal, and it was just a reading a few lines. Larry asked him to be in the movie, and he said yes. Had a good working relationship with Cohen, who Hosman said seemed nice and patient with him. I remember for one scene, he had to throw some water on the kid's puss. I never heard that expression for someone's face before, and it stuck with me. He enjoyed working with John P. Ryan, who described as a fatherly and cool, and Sharon Farrell. Later, she... in one of the scenes, she slapped him a few times before they did it to try and get him to cry. Later, she asked him to slap her, which he did pretty hard, so he recalled. So yeah, I was hoping there was gonna be more to that. So I was like, oh wait, maybe they'll have something about him. That's all it was, just that he was an actor at the Children's Playhouse when they went and pulled him out of there. Good God. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, I was hoping for more. I realized early on in my second viewing of it that I think this is meant to be a fever dream movie. I don't think this is meant to be like almost actual. At first it seems like a real movie, and then they do a little like, you know, a scene where it's just like pollution. Maybe pollution caused it. And I'm like, oh, this is really 70s if they're, you know, talking about pollution. But then as it got to the point where, okay, after the baby's born and it kills everybody, five people in the delivery room, and then escapes out the window, you know, the skylight.
Skylight, yeah.
Because
physics, know, and
then,
screw that.
But then, 20 minutes down the line, he's walking through the hospital. The hospital is just back to normal. It's
yes.
just back to quiet hospital.
Five people operation dead.
After a mass murder just happened, and it should just be all cops running around through every part of it. I mean, maybe I'm used to, you know, post 9/11 lock down the hospital or whatever. But oh my God, how? And I was like, this. There's just no way a real hospital would be like this. And then I'm like, maybe and then when he's driving home and they're like, you know, the baby was born of this guy and this woman and this is their address. And
yes.
I'm like, what?
That I
Come
could
on.
Not. Yeah, I like, mean, I mean, you know, I'm like, I mean, first is, off, I always applaud good use of. Now, this movie takes place on the West Coast, so it's not, you know, WPSR. It's KPSR, Plot Point Specific Radio. But that they named them within 12
name them,
hours.
Dox their address.
And dox
blah, blah,
them.
Blah, blah,
what
blah,
the, f- what the fuck? 215
North Haverstock Street. Yeah. And it's
like, what?
And I'm watching that and I'm like, this is it. This, okay, he's playing for something else. And then as it went on, I'm like, I think this is about, like, I don't think this is politically correct, but it's the 70s and they probably thought it was very progressive idea. And I think it's about, like, it's almost like this internal crazy fever dream of somebody who's had a kid that is somehow developmentally disabled, or, you know, it whether mentally and or physically, and is dealing with the guilt of being like, this is not my child, you know. Because his arc is going from like, this is not my child, I must kill this child, to like, he's got to, but then he gets to see him and he's like, no, this is my baby, he's a real baby and stuff. So it's almost like the process, the guilt of the process of like a parent who's, you know, given birth to a kid that horrifies them.
Right.
You know, and then having to come to terms that it is actually their kid, and they're sort of not stuck with it, but that's the way it is, and humanize, you know, finally ends up being humanized to him. But of course, it's told in just a, you know, semi-gory horror movie context, and I think it works, you know, and at that point, I, you know, I mean, and you know, the baby being, you know, like going out and then targeting milk trucks. Just
okay.
Awesome.
Now I wanted, you know, I wanted to ask,
what is spinach for Popeye spinach for babies? It's milk. They're going to go out and look for milk because they're babies.
So I wanted to ask this question because I was not alive in 1974. Were milkmen still a thing?
Yes.
Okay.
It was the very end of it because I remember getting, like, having a little insulated tin box outside of our house, and we would go, and the milkman would come every day. I think what happened was it used to be small, you know, farms were smaller, and it was just easier to be on a subscription thing from the farm, and they would bring the fresh milk to you rather than, you know, as a convenience. But I think it was probably at this point in time that they, like, really started to mass produce milk so that like, it's just cheaper to put it in the stores and let people pick it up than to have the, you know. But, yeah, I remember the first house that we lived in, we had milk service, and, you know, we would get the box. Some of the that was before I was even in school, so I had, but... I think 74 was just on the edge of where that happened, and it was probably not happening as much, but it was still something that everybody remembered just having. That Carnation milk truck is a beautiful thing, too.
Yeah.
But I think I would like a video game where you play the baby and you just... You know, you're just terrorizing through the streets looking for milk trucks, looking for milk. And that's all. You're just going and just killing anybody that you see that isn't related to you and getting milk. I think that would be a great video game. Hanging out in bushes until you can leap onto somebody's face, you know. And obviously this I cannot think... I just can't think that on some level Basket Case wasn't, you know.
Oh, this reminded me a lot of Basket Case movie. In some ways.
Oh,
this was
yeah.
A lot like Basket Case in some ways.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't help but think that, like, Basket Case was just like Hen and Lauder going like, I want to take this a little further than It's Alive. But I've never seen any of the sequels to them. And I forgot. I knew there were sequels to it, but I forgot the last line in this movie, and I'm like, how are there sequels when he throws the baby up in the air and they shoot the baby, but then there's been another born in Seattle.
Because if there's going to be like a mutant baby...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if there's going to be a mutant baby anywhere, Seattle is pretty high on my list of locales in the U.S., right? It's basically, you know. Basically a wasteland anyway. It's like an Italian post-apocalyptic movie in Seattle, so that makes sense. I would have put it
in like Pittsburgh or like what was it, Ohio? Wasn't it Ohio where the Ohio, it was, somebody had their river, like in the 70s,
yes.
The river was so polluted it would just catch on fire, you know. So that would seem, you know, any kind of Rust Belt area or like that. But yeah, I mean, if it was the 80s, it would have been nuclear waste of some sort.
Yeah, that, but they would have been transporting, you know, underground, right? You know,
honestly, could have just been his ciggies. And that's another great thing. Walking through a hospital with a ciggy in,
yes,
dangling from your lips, just walking down the halls of the hospital, I'm like, ooh, my instant instinct is, oh, he's going to get fucking yelled at. And it's like, oh, no, he's just making the nurse want to light one up.
Yeah. Yeah, that and the room full of the 70s dads, right?
Yes.
So, you
yes.
know, when my kids were born, right, they were born in the same hospital. And they have the dad room is what they call it. And it's basically, it looks like a converted, like, walk-in closet. Like, as you're walking down the hallway to the OR, right before you go through the double doors into the OR, they got the dad room on the right. And it's basically, as I said, it's got one chair, right? One little tiny coffee table with Golf Digest and ESPN, the magazine, on it. And then a little television that was, every time I was there, was tuned to ESPN. All three times. It was ESPN. It was SportsCenter every time. And it's like, okay, yeah, they know what side the bread is buttered on. So I didn't get this full experience with a bunch of guys hanging out and the one guy trying to drum up business for his exterminator shop, you know.
If you'd been there in the 70s and 80s, there would have been a giant ashtray in the middle of the table just filled with from chain smoking dads.
Gosh. No, I mean you're right. I mean this reminded me, Chris, in some ways, kind of like Coen's later movie, The Stuff, which is a favorite of mine, which I'm sure we will cover at some point if we haven't already. I don't think we've covered The Stuff on here. But insofar as that, yes, it works on the surface level as a horror film, but like you said, it has some subtext to it, and it's satirical, right? So parts of it are, you know, pretty you know, they're pretty sly and pretty kind of, you know, they got a bit of a wink and a smirk going on with him.
And It's Alive or in The Stuff?
Both of them. I think both of them have the same type of tone.
More in The Stuff, but like, but it's Alive. I mean, everybody committed to being serious about it, but it was all, the wink was still baked in.
I'm thinking, cops never come off well in a Coen movie. I mean, the cops are like the keystone cops.
Because they were always fining him for filming without a permit. That's why.
Yeah. But they have the entire police force run up and they all draw their guns and point it at a normal baby, right? It's like the buffoonery of the police is satirized here. The ending of this movie, you know what, for all the world, but the ending of this movie, Jay, you might have thought along the same lines. The end of this movie is basically the end of them, right? Yep. Where they're all just marching into the sewers going after the monster.
Yep.
It's not giant ants this time, right? But it's basically the end of them. And, you know, so it's like, exactly. And they immediately lose him, right? The cops lose Frank, right? And you know, none of them really know what they're doing. And so it's like that was, you know. But you talked also about the house and how realistic it was. The school, you know, that was just an elementary school that they, you know, letting them into.
I mean, I don't know what a kindergarten class is like nowadays in a modern school building, but that was like just him sitting in that little room and the ceiling is low. There was the one comedy shot of the cop trying to get a drink out of the water fountain that's like a foot off the ground and like his hat's falling off and stuff while he's like falling over trying to get a drink out of the water fountain. But that scaled down room is just, and Luke, I wondered why you were talking about the letter people the day before. And there's these weird like blow up letter people, and he renamed them somehow. He put like a piece of like, you know, the fluffy group or something.
Well, okay,
like that.
So it's like, the thing we see, and this is for listeners that are older than, well, probably around our age. So it's the Alpha Time reading program featuring the Huggables. So I had no idea what this was. I had absolutely no idea. So I looked this up. And, you know, so I just put in Alpha Time reading program, right? And I put that into into my Google machine. And it comes up on Wikipedia. It's this whole thing, right? This literacy program developed by these two teachers that eventually became a product that they sold nationwide, including the letter people, right? Where each letter was turned into an anthropomorphic character that had a characteristic that was based on their letter. And the consonants were men and the vowels were women, and they all had to work together and without, you know, and they all had, you know, and it was this hugely successful program. And it's like, we went to parochial school. I had no idea. Right? This was totally alien to me. But as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I said, I got to look this up. And it was a whole, you know, I mean, it was, it's like that sells, that's what I'm saying. That sells the entire thing of how, authentic this is, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I vaguely remember, like, I don't remember where I saw the letter people, and it was probably on a videotape in school. And then they probably, I think they had modules that went along with it. So you'd watch the show and then work on modules or something with it. Cause everything in the 70s was that, but I mean, like, early days, Scott Gardner and Chris Honeywell, we were mocking the we were mocking the theme song. Like, I hadn't thought of the letter people in, you know, 40, 45 years or whatever. And then when you put it up, instantly, I come and meet the letter people. I'm like, oh, my God, why do I know that? Why do I know that? And I went and watched the theme on YouTube, and I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I remember Scott Gardner and I mocking that and making up our, like, making up different characters like Mr. Greasy Gums and stuff, except we probably said Greasy Gooms. And Tall Teeth guy was our biggest. There was one kid who got all his adult teeth in, an element, you know, that one kid who gets all their adult teeth in, and they just have these and we were calling him Tall Teeth and stuff like that. But that was something that's been dormant in my mind for almost, God damn it, half a century. and there it is, all back on our Discord. And then the next day, there they are on, and It's Alive. And I didn't notice it when I watched it 3 years ago, but yeah, now I might have to go back and watch it. I found the Mr. Tall Teeth song, and it's a fine song. It's a very good song.
Why, 'tis a fine song, sir.
kind of David Lynchian and a little bit. Oh, also, I also wanted to mention, I have another name for It's Alive. It's called Frank Can't Catch a Break. This poor guy Frank is just sweating through this whole movie. He just, like, nothing's going Frank's way. I love the way his boss is like, come on in, Frank, and just like, Frank, anything we can do for you? And then they're like, clear out his desk, he's done.
Yes. that was cold. Oh, Frank, man, that was cold.
Yeah.
I liked also how Frank had not an unattractive secretary, but she was older. But then the boss had, yes, like the 22-year-old blonde.
Always, yeah. It was, and I mean, for some reason, in the 60s and 70s, they just loved to have people, like, if a husband was in that upper middle class, they were always an ad exec, you know?
Right.
I think starting from, like, what was it, like, the Mary Tyler Moore Show, you know?
Right.
Didn't they all work in it? But yeah, there were so many ad execs in there. But his boss, he looks, I don't think it was that actor, Joe Bob, I can't remember his last name. Not Joe Bob Briggs. Joe Don.
Joe Don Baker?
Yeah. He looked like his boss looked like Joe Don Baker, but wasn't Joe Don Baker. But just the just natural, you know, they're all in their outfits, and he's sitting on his desk, you know, come on in. And he sits down on his desk. We're all casual here. Yeah, we want to do, you know, we got to keep you out of the limelight all the while. Just long enough to get him out of the door, and then it's just like, pack up his stuff. We're done with Frank.
Yeah.
But, you know, in my movie, it would have been like, Frank, we're moving you to the baby formula account.
We're moving you to the baby corridor. Oh, man. That's fantastic. Baby formula. Now, I mean, that's the thing. The thing about this movie, you mentioned the monster baby. It's funny because for all the world, it reminded me of a Plastic Punk. I don't know if any of our listeners have ever
read
up on
the... Is that like a pickled punk?
A pickled punk, yes, that's what I mean, a pickled punk. So a pickled punk, for those who may not know, when you would go to the freak show at the carnival, right, or the fair,
yep,
they might have as part of it the room full of oddities, right? And a pickled punk would be a rubber, deformed, monstrous-looking baby in, like, a specimen jar filled with a fluid like it had been preserved. Right, it's like, oh, yep, this hideous baby born in, you know.
And they were always a baby with a giant head and a little body, yes, sort of like the It's Alive baby. So, I mean, maybe he got some inspiration besides 2001: Space Odyssey and wolves.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, that's,
yeah,
I mean,
it's
baby,
a very,
yeah, I mean, babies kind of look like that anyway, right? They got an oversized head and little body,
mm-hmm,
right? And you know, you, I mean, again, just speaking, you know, honestly, you know, you're in love with your baby, but they're also kind of weird, right? There are things and fluids and smells and things like that that you're just not prepared for, you know, and so it does kind of tap into those basic feelings, yeah, like you said about
that beautiful kid you've been cooking in your belly for 9 months comes out looking like a frog, you know, with a big lump in his head where the forceps hit it, you know, and just like, oh, expected.
So this is a true story. My younger son, who is now 14, when he was born, he looked all the world like a little old Jewish man.
Uh-huh.
He was like, what are you talking about? You know, that's exactly what he looked like when he was born.
Yep.
We have a picture of him like a day old, and he looks exactly like his great-grandfather. So he's got about as much hair, too, so.
Yep. No, I was just going to say, it's the hairline that does it a lot. It's the wispy hair, yep. You come in and you go out with that hairline.
Like I said, I mean, there's parts of this that, again, they just... The other thing, and it's... Remember, long, long time ago on this program, we covered Sleepaway Camp. And we talked about how a film, like, accidentally became relevant. You know? And now in a different context, I think we get something kind of similar here. Because when the wife has the baby, when Lenore has the baby in the house and she's not telling Frank, right? She starts acting very, very strangely, right? She you know, wants to watch a movie, but then she's watching cartoons, and then she's dodging them and not answering questions, and then she says, oh, Frank, make love to me, and all this. And it's like, accidentally, I think that Cohen is now making, like, I don't know, like you were saying about the, you know, the developmental challenges. I think, you know, Cohen has accidentally made a film that's addressing postpartum depression.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's for all the world what it seems like she's going through is some form of postpartum.
Yeah.
Where we're looking at it from the outside saying, why is she acting so strange? But it's like, well, because her body's going through all sorts of biochemical stuff right now that she doesn't know. She doesn't know what she's doing. She's having a mental health issue. And it's like, but that postpartum was not, I mean, it wasn't unknown in the 70s, but it wasn't a, air quotes up to the mic, thing like it is now, right?
Yeah. And they didn't do it. They could have gone a lot more over the top with it, and he didn't. He was for this movie kind of restrained with it, but yeah, it was. And I made the mistake of flipping through because fucking YouTube is. I didn't watch this on YouTube. YouTube has one version that looks like it's Alive, but it's another movie called It's Alive from like 1968
with Tommy Kirk, I think.
It looks terrible.
Yes.
And it's just like, and but then they also had the remake from a couple years ago of It's Alive that I didn't even know happened, and I'm like, and I started watching it, and I'm like, oh, this might be like a money laundering scheme or a tax dodge or something. It was that bad, and I'm watching it, and it's got like 40 minutes at the top of character introductions, the family, and, you know, character drama before you get into the hospital room, you know, and
right,
give birth to the baby. And even then, after that, it was just terrible, and yeah, I was just like, this probably shouldn't happen, but luckily it looks like it happened and nobody cared and it just went away, so there aren't like five new It's Alive, but it's terrible. And I'll bet you there were some modern filmmakers going, let's take something like It's Alive that's kind of a low budget thing, and we can, with modern, you know, even though this one was super low budget too, and but, you know, we could make a really good modern movie out of this and modern it up and make it better. And it's just like, yeah, it's not even a shadow of what Larry Cohen did, you know?
Right.
And
yeah.
But
no, I mean,
I would,
part of it
I
is
would
that
not,
you know, it's if you're going to remake something like this, you've got to either, to me, you either have to address something that they either failed to do or didn't do well in the original, right? Or you have to really take a new approach, and you have to make a new take on it based on the context of the intervening years.
Yes.
I think you could make a good remake of It's Alive today, but it would require some forethought. And it might also require, we talked about this on the last episode, when we're talking about weapons, and it's like making a movie about kids when it's clear you don't have kids. Right?
Yeah.
I think you'd have to be a parent to understand how to make that movie, to understand parenthood and childbirth today, right? How it works to really make that.
If I had to remake it, I would be calling up David Cronenberg. David Cronenberg could take this and make it into something better than Larry Cohen. Different, but like he would have the body horror and the psychology behind it and do it well. But like just some hack person who's just like, we got good digital effects on the baby. And Luke, you saw the picture I put
yes.
up in the Discord of the thumbnail for that movie is just the most horrifyingly bad. It's basically just a baby with half of its face with teeth in it. It's just basically a regular baby and it's toothy. And that's the way the baby is in the movie too. And it's the rubber baby is 10 times better.
Right.
And again, Rick Baker, Rick, and another thing I like, the dad. Remember the dad's in the car and he's doing his, like, he's trying to crack up the kid and the wife and be funny as he's, to cut the tension, and he's doing like an impression of a character and stuff. And he's talking, and I'm looking at his, he's talking full with his mouth, and I'm like, man, he's got some bad teeth in there. He's got some kind of brown teeth and stuff in there. And I'm like, God damn it, you just never see that anymore. You don't see people without perfect, everybody's got perfect teeth in movies. That's why I love watching these 70s, after the 70s, once the 80s hits, people just started getting too pretty in movies. 70s were full of like ugly lead actors or crusty lead actors. Even like he and his boss, I don't know if it was the weather where they were filming, they had like dry lips. Like the boss had like dry lips and like a split where like when your lip gets dry in the winter and splits and bleeds, he had that going on his lip, and they weren't like, let's get makeup in here and touch that up. They could have gotten rid of that, and they're just like, leave it. And the father's lips are all puckered up and dried and cracking and stuff. And I'm like, this makes it feel real, Plus they were using handheld cameras. It has a very documentary feel, especially in the beginning when they're getting ready to go.
When they're in the hospital, it almost, when it's the handheld shot following Frank through the hallways and corridors, it almost looks a little gonzo. The handheld, right? I mean, it almost looks, again, like you say, documentarian. I'm thinking like a gonzo
documentary.
Yeah, right? And there's a bit also when he goes into the room, when Lenore is in the room after she's taken out of the neonatal suite, right? It's almost shot with like a fisheye, right? It has this almost kind of unworldly, odd sort of look to it. And it's like, again, it could be A, that we're shooting it with this lens so we can fit everything in the frame, but it's also B, that it kind of, everything's kind of off kilter and weird, and it makes you feel a little weird because it looks right, but kind of a little off around the edges, So it does do a lot of little things like that. And it's like, again, I described it when I put this on my ex. I said, now watching, right? And I said, what a delightfully strange picture that I've watched here, right? Mm-hmm. And it is. It's strange, but it's delightful. And it was a lot of fun to watch. Even though, given the subject matter and it's not super violent, but it is still a decently horrific picture. But it really, like you said, the 70s films, they have a certain charm to them. And Coen is good about that, about making his films, even when they're micro-budgeted, yes, just making them enjoyable, right?
He usually has, I mean, he'll have goofy ideas, but there's usually a solid script, committed actors, and some of the actors actually giving really good performances, and he makes it work. Even the goofier stuff like God Told Me To and Q, you know, like Q stands out. It's got some neat, you know, stop motion and stuff in it, but the lead actor in Q is just like 100% committed and like makes it fun just to watch him act. Mm-hmm. And his movies should always be, it just seems that they should be much worse than they than they actually are, you know, and they never are. They're always like, it's almost, it's not even like there's a low bar, it's just like I always go like, this is a nice tight little script, you know, it doesn't mess around, you know. I mean, you're in the delivery suite in this movie, you know, in the first 5 minutes, you know.
Yes.
5 minutes, that baby's running a rampage, and 15 minutes into the movie, it's already in the bushes and looking for a milkman. Perfect. You know, not like this other movie that's gonna dick around with the first 40 minutes, you know, making sure everybody's character arcs are laid out and all this, and you know, nope. This is just boom, traveling shot out of a cannon from second one.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you aren't going to see It's Alive for the, you know, the character development of the family.
No, like it's, but you know, it's, so, but
Larry
it's
Cohen,
there,
Larry Cohen's like, I don't have time for that stuff. You know, let's just get to it. You know, he does that in all his movies. Like, let's just get to it. You know, okay, like let's not wait around for this thing. So
yep. Anyway.
So just wanted to mention this because people might be looking to watch It's Alive. If you go and look up It's Alive, make sure you find 1974 It's Alive and not the 1969 version, because that movie is a pile of hot garbage. So we found this with ads on YouTube, but it's also on Daily Motion with ads, like a normal kind of thing.
Yep.
And it was and on the Plex server.
So it is on the Plex, like the Plex app, which is like the normal streaming service that they have. Now, here's the thing with Plex, okay? So I watched it on Plex, and it had a commercial about every 10 minutes. Nothing bad, right? Until the very end, the last 10 minutes, it would not get past the ad. So it kept going, and it would restart. And I'm like, son of a bitch. And I would have to back out and say, resume, okay, and do it. And it would play the ad, and then it would jump back to the beginning again. So I'm like, I am not giving up on this with 10 minutes to go. So I ended up having to watch the last 10 minutes on YouTube anyway. So just what, you know, that caveat emptor, I would say that, except Plex is free, so it's not really buyer beware. I guess it's streamer beware, right? So
almost, if you want to find almost anything, there's the Russian Facebook,
yes,
OK.ru.
Okay, rule
has a lot of that stuff. If you're gonna use it, be one of those people that has a VPN,
yes,
and has like a nice strong, you know, setup for antivirus and stuff,
yes,
like that. Not that I've done some research on OKRU, and it doesn't seem to be problematic with that. But it is,
but
also
just in
the
case.
Russian Facebook. Yeah, it's the Russian Facebook. So, you know, like get your internet condom on to go to that. But once you go to OKRU, they got a lot of even if you want to look for obscure art films, from other countries and stuff like that, and experimental films, it's like they all seem to end up on. I watched a Louis Malle movie that I didn't even know existed with the French with subtitles on it that was fantastic. I'd never heard of it before.
The other trick,
and no commercials.
Yeah. Now the other trick, if you're going to use OKRU, I find is, you know, use somebody else's computer, right? You know, just when they're not around, or, you know, hey, can I borrow your laptop? You know, that's no problem. Then, you know, whatever the issues are, it's not your fault. So
yeah. Yeah. And And hey, you know, I mean, what's the worst that they might end up with a little bonus stuff on their computer? That's all.
Right.
You're doing them a favor.
Very so, good, comrade. You know.
Yeah, the It's Alive, the trilogy can be purchased on Blu-ray. That's what I have it on.
I think they're all Larry Cohen too, aren't they? All three movies are all Larry Cohen. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
I plan on watching them because I gotta say I've seen scenes from Island of the Live and it looked terrible, but it's Larry Cohen, so I might be wrong with that. You know, I need to. It's been many years since I saw like the scenes from it and publicity shots of the adult babies in their adult baby suits, but I'm sure they're all kind of probably pretty decent watches.
Yeah, well. It's put it this way. So
is that box available? Is that box from Shout Factory, Jay, or who's that from?
Yes. Yes, the Shout Factory, all three of them together. Blu-ray. That's how I have it. So but yeah, so again, you know, if you were looking to purchase them in the physical media form, that would be probably your best bet, because I mean, they're available on, like, I had them on DVD forever ago, like when it originally came out, but I mean, just trying to find, give me one sec, guys, sorry. It's Alive right now would run you about, like, so all three of them together, $28. I'm sure you can find it used even cheaper. So that's not bad for all three movies. You know, It's Alive Again and Island of the Alive. It does not include the remake, though. That is free on YouTube, though, so...
Right, yeah, you can figure that one good out luck. Yourself.
Yep. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yep, just enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's, you know, I mean, again, if, and maybe I'm being obvious here, but if you're listening to this show, right, I think that's an easy pickup. This one alone is a very solid, worthwhile watch. The two sequels are both by Cohen. They're I haven't seen them, so I really can't say, but I've got to imagine they're at least entertaining, right? Cohen stuff is always entertaining. And, you know, I mean, again, we know Shout Factory does a good job on their stuff for their, you know, they serve their genre market well. You know how I know they serve them well? Because anytime there's a new Shout Factory release, you go on, whether it's the Facebook groups or whatever the groups where they're talking about it, and they're bitching and moaning about the nittiest of nitpicks, right? That's how you know they've got a good product. Because if it's like, it's like, wow, the picture is absolute shit. It's like, okay, well, then people stop buying them. But it's like, well, you know, they did not include the original Portuguese language twack. How am I supposed to simulate when I saw this movie in Brazil? You know, I don't know why Homestar Runner is on this group, but you know, that's what these people sound like. And so that when they're bitching about that stuff, like you said, some people have to complain. So it's like, if that's what they're reaching for, you know, it's got to be a good disc.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so it's again available, you know, definitely check. You got to be interested in checking it out. Of course, you can probably find a streaming, you know, if you're willing to pay for it, you know, kind of thing, or find it digitally, you know, and other places, as we said, with a few commercials in there, so no big deal. But again, if you have seen this movie, you know, kind of thing, and you, you know, want to rediscover it, again, that all three of them together, that to me was, that's how I picked it up. I was like, well, I'm not trying to pick up single discs here and there. It's all three separate discs. Shout Factory did it up. You know, well worth, they don't do it that way, so.
A lot of the times when you find those collections with all three movies are cheaper than just buying the single movie a lot of times, of course. It seems like. Yeah. So.
But again, be careful. Do not purchase It's Alive and the year, or It's Alive year 2889. That's the other It's Alive from 1969. Yeah. That movie sucks.
If it's from the 60s or the 2000s, just go the walk the turn around and walk the other way.
Watch. We're going to find the one person who's like the original It's Alive from 69 is like their favorite movie of all time. And they're like,
hey, you know what?
I understand.
If It's Alive from 1969 is your favorite movie, okay? And that's, you know, directed by Larry Buchanan, right? AIP, right? It's got Tommy Kirk in it, right? And Shirley Bond, okay? Then please write us, freakvault@gmail.com, and let us know why we should check out It's Alive 1969. Okay?
And Larry Buchanan is sort of a Timu version of what's his name?
Larry Cohen.
Larry Buchanan's of Larry Cohen. Yeah, but Larry Buchanan's done some pretty decent grindhousey stuff too, but not It's Alive, that's for sure.
So I was gonna say the one that I think most people might know Larry Buchanan is Mars Needs Women.
Yes.
Right? And which, you know, not the rap song, right? That's a different one, but that has Mars Needs Women in it. But you know, that one always will stand out, and Zontar the Thing from Venus is one that I you know, I have some affection for. And The Eye Creatures, which has one of the funniest on-screen mm-hmm. titles of all time, because the its on-screen title is Attack of the Eye Creatures.
Oh. The Eye Creatures. Oh,
whoops.
Yes, yep. Because the movie yep. was originally shot as The Eye Creatures, and they gave it a new title, and they put a credit over it that says Attack of the, and then it says The Eye Creatures. So it's Attack of the Eye Creatures.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, which
that stuff is wonderful because it takes quite a bit of work to do that.
Yeah,
and a bit of time. So it takes a special kind of not paying attention and not caring for something like that to happen.
Yes,
you know what they're thinking is no one's going to notice.
No one's going to notice that crap. I mean, that was how Night of the Living Dead ended up in the public domain, right? They put the new yep. Title page on it. Forgot to put a copyright on it. Doot, 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 doot,
doot. Doot, 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 doot. Then the sound of money being flushed down the toilet.
Well, there you go. But in any event, yeah, so if you want to check out It's Alive, you know, it's got some streaming places. You can pick it up on disc. To me, it's totally worth it. This is a classic 70s horror film, which I remember seeing in video stores all through the 80s and 90s into the 2000s. You know, again, even and it's again, it's one of those ones that's like, again, I knew what it was about long before I ever saw it, and it totally lives up to it. It's an absolutely delightfully bizarre little watch, and like I said, it punches out of its weight. That's probably the best way I can describe it, right? You know. And I'll almost never fault a movie for being too ambitious, even if it doesn't reach those goals. But this one is ambitious and comes really close to hitting all of them. So I've got to give it to Cohen. Yeah. This is a solid little picture.
Yeah. And even some like nice cinematography. He was obviously just like, once he got those police cars in the tunnels, he was just like, oh God, let's just film these over and over. They look so good driving through with their lights flashing through the tunnel. And you can tell they just really shot them in the tunnels because those tunnels are gross. So they're probably like wading through some dried up sewage and all that. And I appreciate that. I appreciate mm-hmm. going that extra mile into the sewer.
Going that extra mile into the sewer.
I'm restraining my cat. I have a little printer that I print my labels for eBay stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it absolutely gets screwed up by cat. It's one of those heat printers.
And yeah.
It gets screwed up by cat hair. And my cat just insists on, out of everything to rub her face against, she's doing it right now. She just goes for that thing. I'm going to have to cover it up because she just comes in and is just like, I'm going to put my hair right here. Is this the worst place it could go? Yes, it is. And you can't keep me away from it.
No. No, cats just know. Cats know. They're like,
they know the people who don't want them on their lap, and then
absolutely,
like deathly allergic to them, and then they just come up and are like, "Hi."
Oh, absolutely, and especially the long-haired cats. You know, my wife's cat, who passed away many years ago, her Himalayan Elsa was a beautiful cat. She looked like Blofeld's cat from James Bond, but she was a long hair. And my friend Joe, who is allergic to cats, she loved Joe, loved him to death. Just the same way she loved me when I met her and she was starting to go into heat. She was like, ooh, you smell like a man. I like you. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, Elsa. No. You're not needing your claws there. No. You know.
You're a nice cat, but it ain't going to happen.
Oh, man. Unlike the poor cat in this movie. So.
I'm going to tell you exactly what I told Rock Hudson. It ain't happening, man.
Jesus.
I can't remember what movie that's from, but that line just sticks in my head.
Oh, boy.
That reminds me of a bit from Cerebus in Hell, where it's like, Cerebus was in the shower in prison, and he dropped the soap. The big guy picked it up and said, nice try, asshole.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Ah!